Greetings, everyone. I'm used to a great big lectern, so this could be a challenge. Better than freestanding mic, I guess. At the Bible study, Mr. Daniger introduced himself as Dana's dad, while I'm Dad Moto, for all of you that know Eric on the chat lines. He typed that in one day when I was making comments, and he didn't want them to figure that it was him making them. So to introduce you a little bit, people ask me a lot of times, why do we go to Portland for 15 hours to a Northwest weekend, or even here? I've got a little bit of a news update. One of the elders in Canada works for a radio broadcasting company. So he sends us out news updates every week to the ministers that are on the list. And here's one about Canada, or about Alberta, I figured I'd read it to you, maybe you can get an idea of why we like to come down to the States. It's called Redneck Refuge. Alberta could be Canada's black sheep. This was from Associated Press, most of you know who that is. It says, it was only a tongue-in-cheek letter to a newspaper, but the suggestion to trade Alberta to the United States for perhaps Minnesota got a lot of Canadians thinking about the idiosyncratic, occasionally un-Canadian province. Alberta, as many of you know, is Canada's oil field, it's cowboy country, it's headquarters for the anti-gun control lobby, stronghold for the right-wing political movement, and in the American West, it might fit in comfortably, that's the U.S. West, but in Canada, it says, well, Alberta is a little different. Alberta feels good about being Albertan, or Albertans rather feel good about being in Alberta. We just would like to be left alone to run our own affairs and be taxed as little as possible, and we do just fine. The Toronto-based Globe and Mail, which circulates across Canada, recently published a letter from a Toronto reader named John Firth, who bemoaned the Alberta government's opposition to gun control and its reluctance to embrace gay rights. If any of you watch or listen to Canadian news, Alberta has been very vociferous about refusing gay rights, and it's caused a lot of troubles in the Supreme Court and everything. It's still in the news. It says, clearly the time has come to expel, this is from this guy from this letter, clearly it has come time to expel this right-wing cuckoo from the Canadian nest, wrote Firth, who proposed trading the province the United States for one of the more civilized border states, perhaps Minnesota or Vermont. I noticed Montana wasn't in there. Most of the Montanans, like the Danigers and the all them, maybe they want to be Albertans, I'm not sure. But anyways, no, Montana's not there. It says, among Alberta's distinctions, it says it's the only province with no sales tax, is a bastion for a right-wing reform party. Alberta initiated a legal challenge to the federal gun control legislation, which Americans, I'm sure, can understand, which requires registration of all firearms in Canada. It implemented a no-frills policy, get this, at its jails, rationing toilet paper, removing pool tables, and eliminating bacon from the breakfast menu that prompted one offender to request a 24-month term in a federal prison rather than a 15-month term in an Alberta jail. So Mr. Palmer makes a little note here. He says, is it just good fortune, or has Alberta been blessed for its sometimes standalone attitude on controversial issues of getting tough on criminals and homosexuality? So anyway, that's what Alberta's all about. So that's why we're here, because really we're going to become a state anyways. So those of you who are at Mr. Daniger's Bible study this morning, he challenged the youth to develop relationships with each other, and I would like to expand on this. Works in quite well, I'm sure, with his Bible study. Expand on his theme and challenge you as young people to develop a relationship with your church and with Jesus Christ. So that's what this sermon's going to be about. It's called The Day's Pay. For those that like a title. So we all have a goal. We all have a common purpose.
And I would like to ask you a question. How would you respond if Jesus Christ asked you the following? He would say, to help spread my gospel, would you be willing to do a day's work for a day's pay? How would you respond to that? Maybe you could write down what your response is. So say, how would you respond? Would you say, what do I have to do for that day's pay? Or how much is the pay? Finally, maybe you'd wonder, do I have the qualifications to do that job? So I have another question. What brings us all here? Don't we have a common goal? If not, that's why we're all here. So the answer should be the same for all of us. It should be for the teens, the young adults, and the older adults. Our answer should all be the same. We are here because we are united in our faith in Jesus Christ. Ultimately, that's why we are here. So what does Christ really expect from you and from me? What is that day's work for that day's pay? And how does that fulfill your commitment to God and Jesus Christ? So we'll turn to 1 Corinthians 12, verse 12. This sermon is directed to the young Christians here. Mr. Deniger mentioned the stereotype Christian term, but I'll use that term because I think he explained that for you young people, what a young Christian really is. So the young Christians here are the teens and the young adults. That's what I'm directing this to. My goal is to show you as young persons that this is your church. And God expects you as teens and young adults to be actively a part of your church. And also, He expects you to serve with an example, to be show your light and to show a commitment to God and Jesus Christ. So 1 Corinthians 12:12. For as the body is one and has many members, I'm going to use a couple of the parables and stuff here. We might have a little bit of a twist to it, but I think it applies. For as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. Verse 13, for by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether Jew or Greeks, whether slaves or free, we have been made to drink into one Spirit. For in fact, the body is not one member, but many. So we're all part of God's church, from the youngest ones to the oldest. We are not at all as yet baptized, but we all look to the Holy Spirit, and again Mr. Deniger mentioned that, the Holy Spirit to refresh us and to guide us. Verse 15, we'll continue. So if the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, am I not the body? Is it therefore not the body? So if a teen says, I am not baptized, therefore I am not part of the church. Or if a young adult says, I am not a deacon, or a deaconess, or a minister, therefore I am not part of the church. The question is, where is the body of the church? We are all a part. Just as the hands and the eyes and the ears are all vital parts of our body, so are the teens and the young adults part of the church and vital parts. Verse 17, we'll continue. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body just as He pleased. And if we were all one member, where would the body be? So where would the church be if all the members were seniors or if everyone was a minister? And verse 20, but now indeed there are many members, yet one body, and the eyes cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, or the senior cannot say to the young person, I have no need of you, or the parents cannot say to the teens, we have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. No much Rather, those members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. So those which seem, not really, to be weaker are necessary. Where would the church be without the children, without the teens, and without the young adults? It would have no future. A church without the youth is a dying church. The way God designed our body is a model for understanding our lives together with in the church. Every single part is dependent on each other. The children, the teens, and the young adults, the families, the seniors, the ministers are all dependent. There are really no weaker parts. There are no less honorable parts, as you can read on if we continued on those verses. If God's church is to have a future, the child or the teen is just as important as the council member, the president, or the minister, or the adult. To be part of God's work doesn't mean that you as a Christian have to be in the limelight. Nor is a Christianity an individualistic private affair. The me, God, and a mountaintop approach to being a Christian is really opposite to what Paul is saying here. Paul is telling those in the church, including all young people, as you hear, that God's church is your church. You as a young person must recognize that this is your church and not just your parents. You as a young person are a vital part of Christ's body, just as your hand is a vital part of your own body. You must never forget this, that you are part of Christ's body. Only as you accept your part in the church, that body, does your part really become meaningful, though. So it is my desire and hope that through activities like the Northwest Weekend here and also in Portland, that the young people in the church begin to realize and begin to recognize that their proper place in the church and that they take ownership in their church. 1 Corinthians 12 showed us that each of us, the youngest to the oldest, has an equal ownership. We are all different, but we are all a vital part of the body. We are all servants of our Master, Jesus Christ, and we all have different gifts and different abilities. And with that thought, we'll turn to Matthew 25, verse 14. Here we find a parable of the talents. And young people here, listen to what Christ says and is saying to you as we go through these verses, recognizing that it does apply to you just as much as anyone else here. You as a young person are a servant of Jesus Christ. Therefore, Christ expects you to have and use abilities to glorify Him. So Matthew 25, verse 14. For the kingdom of heaven, we all know this parable, is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. When you think about what we've seen about servants and people that have lots of servants, they tend to be younger as well. So this does apply to you. I don't think there's any doubt that Christ really wouldn't include young people, young Christians here. So Jesus Christ is this man, in verse 14, he's the master. Jesus Christ is the absolute owner and proprietor. Jesus Christ is in heaven, and we await his return from heaven, that far country that verse 14 talks about. And to you, his servants, he delivers his goods. Verse 15. And to one, that's one of you, he gave 5 talents. And to another, 2, and to another, 1. To each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on a journey. So there is a trust and a commitment to you. Jesus Christ has delivered you his goods. Having appointed you to work, for Christ obviously wishes no servant to be idle, he left you something to work upon. You receive from Christ your talents in order to work for him. He intends you to be busy with his business. Verse 16. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded them, and made another 5 talents. And likewise he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. So whatever you received is to be made use of for Christ. The talents and the abilities and gifts that you have received are really still a property of Jesus Christ. We are but tenants in this land, stewards of his manifold grace, meaning that you and I are to be in a state of work and business. And in that state, you are to be diligent in your work and your service. We'll continue on in verse 18. But he who had received 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. And after a long time, the Lord came to those servants. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with him. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought the 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You are faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the glory of the Lord. He also who had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I have gained 2 more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the glory of the Lord. The master was traveling into a far country. When Christ went to heaven, he was the man traveling into that far country. That is the purpose, to be away for a great while. When he went, he took care to furnish his church, all of us, with the necessary things, all the things necessary during his absence. He gave to every young person talents, some more, others less. To one of you, he gave 5 talents. To another one, 2. And to one of you, maybe 1. To everyone, according to his abilities. God has made people with different abilities in mind, in body, in status, in relationships, in interests. Because of those differences, we all have different abilities and different gifts. But make no mistake, the abilities we have are from God. Each teen here has at least 1 talent that he has entrusted to you. God expects to find you at work with that talent. God has not given you the same abilities and opportunities. He divides as he wills. Some young people are cut out for service in one kind of thing, others in another, just as the parts or the members of your natural physical body. So 2 of those servants did well. They were diligent and faithful. They went and they traded. They put the money that they were entrusted with to use for what it was intended. They laid it out in goods and made return of it. As soon as their master was gone, they immediately applied themselves to the business at hand. As young Christians, you also must put yourself to work, as every Christian must. So you need to set about it quickly and not lose time. They went and traded, it says. A true Christian is a spiritual tradesman of sorts. So picture yourself just as that, a spiritual tradesman, going about your trade, doing Christ's work. These servants were successful by doubling their stock. In a little time, they had made dollar for dollar. And even in Canada, that makes a difference. Not as much. He that had 5 talents soon made 5 more. Trading our talents in the world, however, is not always successful in the kind of world we live in today. So we'll turn to Isaiah 49, verse 4 quickly, just to look at that. Isaiah 49, verse 4. This world many times is harsh on people that try to do good, try to follow Christ. Verse 4, "Then I said, I have labored in vain. I have spent my strength for nothing and in vain. Yet surely my just reward is with the Lord, and my work with my God." Actively living as a young Christian many times does not give the obvious rewards from your peers at school or in your community. But the hand of the diligent is rich in that the comforts and the treasures of God and Jesus Christ are what you're really looking for. There is a great deal to be gotten by being a tradesman in God's religion. Are you sitting there in your chair thinking, "Hey, I'm off the hook because I have no talents. I have no abilities"? Sorry, everybody has at least one, and that we must recognize. So back in Matthew 25, verse 24, it says, "Then he who had received one talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours." But the Lord answered and said to him, "You wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reaped where I have not sown and gathered where I have not gathered seed." So what did he do? He dug in the earth and hid the talent for fear that it should be stolen. You have to note here that he did not misspend it. He did not misuse it in any way. He did not embezzle it, or he didn't squander it away, but he hid it. He hid his Lord's money. Had it been his own, he might have done what he pleased with it, but he just hid his Lord's money. So whatever abilities and advantages that you have, they really are not your own. As I said before, you are but stewards of them. You must give account to the Lord. Those goods, whose goods they are. A question for you all, then: should you be idle while others are active? This parable shows us that we should never be idle, because in verse 30, the penalty says, "Cast the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Even as teens, God expects you to use the abilities that he has given you. So I have a little story here that I'll read. It's called Breakwater on Elk Creek. It's by G.E. Wallace. I've edited it a little bit to shorten it up. In this story, we will see a godly character and a godly attitude, one that we all should have. It goes as follows. "I don't think," said Mr. Gordon, the senior partner of the firm Gordon & Stewart, wholesale merchants, "that one of these young fellows," he nodded at the list of names, "is qualified for the position. There is a position open, not an especially important one, but one that would lead to an important position later. And the young fellow who was to be hired to fill that position must have certain qualifications." Mr. Gordon looked outside, and he saw raindrops on the window. The raindrops reminded him that up at Summit, which is a small hamlet in the hills, he had a summer home. The Elk Creek ran through his land, and something had to be done about Elk Creek. When in flood, Elk Creek roared down through the steep gully, gathering force as it went, and then swept in a half circle across the flat. His summer home was on it. Mr. Gordon wondered how the creek was behaving. He was worried, for during the last few months it had been exceptionally high and had gone on a rampage and was threatening to cut a new channel across the flat. So Mr. Gordon frowned at the raindrops and thought, "I must hunt up someone and hire him to fix that creek." And thus it is that George Jennings comes into the story. He was a fine fellow, 18 years old, a high school graduate. He was honest, industrious, and smart. If he had been born in a different community, he might have had the chance to make something of himself. But in Summit, there were no schools higher than the little local high school. And in Summit, there were no industries. In Summit, there was nothing save woods, hills, and pure water and pure air. Opportunity knocks, the proverb has it, at everybody's door. Well, maybe, but the opportunity, where was it in Summit? Except, of course, to remain and plow the rocky fields of the small farms and do the manual tasks that sometimes came your way. No one in Summit ever had a chance. And so it would be with George. Now, George was out plowing one of the stoniest fields in the whole township on the Friday that Mr. Gordon drove to see him. George listened to what Mr. Gordon had to say. I want you to plow and scrape the old channel deeper. It is filled with gravel, and then I want you to build a breakwater where the creek's trying to cut a new channel. One good day's work for one good day's pay, $4. Obviously, this is set back a few years. Maybe not. So one good day's work for one good day's pay. If that were opportunity, the opportunity was well disguised. One day's work, digging out a creek. Still, George was thankful, and he proved he was glad to get the job by arriving at Mr. Gordon's place bright and early the next day. He plowed out the creek bed, drew the gravel to where it would do the most good, and protecting the bank where it was threatened. And that afternoon, he began building the breakwater. He nailed planks to stakes and then tied the whole breakwater to other stakes up on the bank. It's a pretty good job, Mr. Gordon said. I think it will hold. George did not answer. He suddenly thought of something, although it meant more work. And here's your pay, Mr. Gordon said. And that really ought to have taken George Jennings completely out of the story. He had been hired, after all, to do one good day's work. And he had done it. And he was tired, and he had his pay for his work. He drove home, but he couldn't put the breakwater out of his mind. If that wooden breakwater were protected by a living breakwater set in front, it would be doubly secure. Still, he had built his wings, sloped it back into the bank, and it ought to hold. He had done all that he was paid to do. So why worry? Jim Wilson, George thought, has fought a creek all his life. I guess I'll go over and see Mr. Wilson. So he tramped a good 3 miles that evening, and Mr. Wilson talked with eloquence all about the subject that he was learned. Willows, he said, sort of pushed the creek over to where it belongs, Jim Wilson said. So George said, do you mind if I cut a few willow shoots? Cut all you want. The stars came out and twinkled, but George kept on cutting. Early Monday morning, George went back to the breakwater he had built and was busy planting the willow shoots when Mr. Gordon walked out of his house and he came down to where George was working. I thought I'd put a few willows in, George said. And he explained all about how the willows work, how their roots develop, and how the roots hold the land. And if they're given a chance to grow, he said, they'll hold the bank and protect the breakwater behind them. So George nodded, or rather, Mr. Gordon nodded, but he said, the contract had called just for a day's work, for a day's pay. And George is putting in extra time. That's all right, George said. I just thought I'd add something a little extra to make sure the bank will hold. He smiled. Really, he added, you didn't hire me to do day's work. You hired me to do a job. By the way, Mr. Gordon finally said, what education do you have? I was graduated from high school, George answered. You have no special training then? None, George admitted, but he sighed wistfully to himself as he said it. He surely would have liked to have business training, but there were no schools near Summit. So he watched George and continued watching until George had put in the last of the willow shoots. And then George tramped home while Mr. Gordon went down to the city. in Summit.
There are jumbled hills and rocks and small farms, and also Elk Creek. Of course, there are fine fellows too, fellows like George Jennings. But what chance do they ever have? After all, opportunity just does not exist in Summit. I say, Mr. Gordon said to Mr. Stewart, his partner, you remember last Friday when we were talking about the job in the shipping department? Well, you really don't have to worry about that position any longer. I found a young fellow who was hired to do a certain thing and then went on and did a little extra on his own accord. And thus, it was that opportunity came to Summit. And to one who was ready to seize the opportunity. And that's the end of the little story. So as you live your Christian life, live as George Jennings. Always be willing to go above and beyond in service. Your Christian life story should be similar to this story. Look at every job experience as he did. Are you hired by God to do a day's work? Or are you hired, are you called as a young person to do a job? Job that must be completed. Are you one who is ready to seize the opportunity that Jesus Christ has set out before you? And we'll turn to 1 Peter 4, verse 10, for the last scripture. And I'll read this in a non-inspired version, like Ben says, NIV. Makes the words it somewhat different. 1 Peter 4, verse 10. Each one should use whatever gifts he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms. If anyone speaks, he should do it as one speaking the very words of God. If anyone serves, he should do it with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. Amen. So every one of us, all of us, belong to Jesus Christ. All of us are united under one head, Christ himself. Each one of us has God's given abilities that can strengthen the whole body. Your special abilities may seem small or they may be large, but it is yours to use in God's service. Ask God to help you recognize your unique gifts and your abilities to contribute to strengthen the church and to contribute to the health of the church. Remember, a healthy church is one that follows Jesus Christ and is always looking forward and is youthful. In conclusion, it is good to keep an account of your blessings from God, to remember what you have received, and maybe that you will know what is expected of you. Jesus commends his servants with attitudes like George Jennings. He says, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Christ calls to you by the character you display, good and faithful. Your performance will be accepted. He will say, "Well done." Jesus Christ will call those of you, and only those, that are good servants, that have done well, for it is by continual, patient well-doing that you seek the glory and honor of God. If you seek, you will find.